Welcome to Core Bariatrics Podcast, hosted by bariatric surgeon Dr. Maria Ilyakova and Tammy Lacoste, bariatric coordinator and a patient herself. Our goal is building and elevating our community. The Core Bariatrics Podcast does not offer medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. On this podcast, we aim to share stories, support, and insight into the world beyond the clinic. Let's get into it. All right, Maria, take three. But I think everybody needs to hear these stories. So has Sasha ever gotten into any food that she shouldn't have?
Oh, yeah. Oh, honestly, she's really good about this stuff. Sasha's my dog, by the way, everybody. I don't have any babies that are human, at least. And no, she did get into some chocolates over the holidays. Over Christmas, I had some friends over. We were doing a chocolate and wine night. And for the first time in her life, she actually got into some food. And it was doggy level. So I run over there. She's got little white chocolate stash going, and I shove my hand, like you do, down her throat to make her get that back out, and turns out she ate max one piece of chocolate. Kidney failure averted, but...
Helicopter dog mom.
She's what I got, okay?
Okay, but yeah.
Unlike you, who have three.
Yes.
And sounds... What about you? What about your babies?
I just gotta tell you about Cohen, that he is my youngest, 2.5 years old. I was single parenting it. Well, my husband was out plowing snow for the DOT. So I was giving my middle son a bath.
Okay.
And so my youngest was, I left him downstairs with his phone, watching some Blippi. And so I come downstairs. He's, Mom, come here, come here. What is going on? This boy took it upon himself to take the lid off the popcorn popper, put the kernels in, put the lid back on the popcorn popper.
Whoa. Grab
a bowl and make himself some popcorn. So
he's two.
I'm so done with kids.
He's
no more kids.
Two. He literally knows how to feed himself better than I did, I think, as a young adult.
Most men.
That's
honestly.
Myself, Sorry. Too. I'm not a man, as far as I know. However, I would be in that bucket as well. So we are talking about babies of the human and non-human kind because we're going to talk about fertility today, Tammy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and this is one of my favorite topics, personally.
It really is.
Fertility and sexual health, and we'll get there. But one of the reasons why is because I am astounded by how many people are actually affected by infertility in the U.S.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to guess how many women, let's just start with women first, are affected by infertility?
Okay. We're going to be real open and honest because we've ran this three times. My first guess, though, was one of three.
One of three. So it is actually a little lower than that. It's more like one in four to one in five.
Okay.
But that's still, of women between the ages of 15 and 49, that amounts to almost 20 million women.
That's so much.
It's so many. And it's probably underreported because a lot of women, like myself, for instance, have never had babies. I don't know if I have fertility issues or not. And we're talking about women as early as young as 15 and as old as 49. I don't think there's a lot of women that are trying to get pregnant at those extremes of ages, for instance. But still, 20 million women.
That's so many.
Yeah, and that's straight up infertility. We are not talking about sexual health yet. And men, I'm curious what you think. How many men do you think are affected?
Okay, I don't even remember the answer to this.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I know it was a little less.
Yeah.
What, one in six?
Yeah, it's like one in eight. About 6 million men. And again, this is what's reported because we don't know if there's a lot more guys out there.
Oh, yeah.
Guys and women. And then erectile dysfunction. What about those numbers? Erectile dysfunction. Your wang not working, not getting it up or not blasting or...
I feel like the reported number is probably a lot lower than what's actually out there because I don't feel like men are openly going to the doctor.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Men are the worst to go to the doctor. But, or at least my husband, I should say. But especially in that matter.
Like, yes.
It is embarrassing. Right. Not that there's anything wrong with you.
Oh. And that's the thing is, you know, we don't really talk about sex. We're
exactly.
a pretty puritanical society. We don't like to talk about sex. We don't really want to deal with this. But over 10 million men reported, probably more, deal with erectile dysfunction. That is almost 20 million men, too. They're dealing with infertility and erectile dysfunction. So altogether, about 40 million people as a conservative estimate. That is a lot of people.
So many people.
Maybe we should talk about this a little more.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So why are we talking about fertility and sexual health if what we normally talk about is weight and obesity and bariatric surgery and things like that? It's because obesity actually has a lot to do with sexual health and fertility. And especially when people have a BMI of over 30, their chances of getting pregnant, having a healthy pregnancy, or having a really healthy sexually active life, getting what they want out of it, it's harder. And there's a lot of reasons for that. So we're going to talk about it today.
Please do. Please do.
So the first thing is when your BMI is over 30, and this isn't for everyone. I want to be super clear,
right?
Because
right?
people can have healthy pregnancies at all ages, at all sizes, at all of that. But when your BMI is over 30, on average, the time that it takes you, both as men and women, to conceive, to actually have a pregnancy, is higher. So it takes longer time. Yeah. It takes more efforts.
Yeah.
And even when it happens, your rates of having miscarriage are higher.
That's so sad.
Isn't that wild? And actually, miscarriage is pretty common anyway in the U.S., whether
right.
we don't really know all the reasons for that. But when obesity is added into the equation, both either for the male or the female partner, your time to get pregnant is longer and your risk of even things like miscarriage is higher.
Okay. Tell me all the ways because I know
right.
you're
That's
going
right.
to.
We're
going
to totally talk about it. And for women specifically, so you have to ovulate, you have to release an egg in order to be able to have an egg to fertilize,
yes.
right? So if you have insulin resistance, where your body's not appropriately putting blood sugar into the cells and using it, or if you have high androgen levels, we'll talk about that in just a second, it's really hard for you to release an egg on time every time.
Yeah.
So what are androgens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I usually know most of the terms. I've been through anatomy and physiology.
Right?
I've been
right.
through the medical field. Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Okay. So androgens are actually, it's super simple. Andro, think men. Hey, yeah.
Oh, when they're hot. Oh, okay.
Hey, yeah.
We've recorded this three times in on that show.
I have just now said that. So there, that would be why. But no, androgens are things like testosterone. They're sex hormones endocrine hormones, basically, that help men have the features that we typically think of as masculine. So
yeah.
hair in certain places, deeper mm-hmm. voices, different fat distributions on their body than women do, all those things. If women have high androgen levels, it is way harder for them to actually release an egg appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And actually in states like PCOS, polycystic ovarian
right.
syndrome, this is exactly what's going on. As you have higher androgen levels, you have insulin resistance, and you have lower regular hormones that allow you to actually release and implant an egg.
That makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
yeah. So anyway, so that is a much likelier state when people have a BMI of over 30.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not for everyone again, but for those folks. And then even if you get pregnant, this is also interesting, your risk of certain conditions like preeclampsia, eclampsia, gestational diabetes, all of that is higher. So your risk of having blood pressure problems or diabetes, even if you were healthy before your pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
even if you didn't have any history, family history of diabetes, family history of blood pressure problems, you didn't have those problems, your risk of getting those during your pregnancy are higher. Isn't that wild? And that puts you and baby at risk. So not just you, but even your baby now has a higher risk of having a preterm delivery, so delivering earlier than you otherwise would, a C-section, which
mm-hmm.
comes with its own set of complications
yeah.
and problems and things
right.
like that. The baby being too small or too big for
mm-hmm.
regular, so what's called small for gestational age or large for gestational age, stillbirth even,
mm-hmm.
rates are higher, definitely miscarriage rates are higher, and then even things like if you have to have a wound repair from a C-section
right.
or you tear your perineum, for instance, delivering a baby, especially a bigger than usual one, you sometimes have to get that sewn back. Your complications
mm-hmm.
with those wounds can be higher. So it's really the entire gamut, which is nuts, because it's not just woman, it's now baby too. It's crazy.
But all the more increased issues, complications,
right.
makes sense because
right.
my kids were all backwards. The pregnant, my first baby,
yeah.
like I had no issues. His birth was the shortest, all the
uh-huh.
things.
Yep.
The second was a little more of an issue.
Yep.
The third was just, he's the one popping popcorn, so that
right.
just says it all. But his labor...
But see, he was worth it, clearly, but yes.
His labor was 92 hours, and that's not how
bananas.
Your body... Usually women's births get much quicker. Like, their first one's
right.
for
right.
sure, like 7 hours, and then
right.
you talk about how these moms are literally popping
yeah.
up babies and before they even...
Yeah, before they even get
the
to the
car.
Hospital. And that's not always the case, obviously.
Right.
That's somewhat a wives' tale, but somewhat true. But no, you're absolutely right. So maybe weight has something to do with that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Age, maybe other factors... But you're absolutely right. When people have obesity, when they already have some extra weight on board, their risk for these problems. So it's not, again,
mm-hmm.
everyone that's having them. And to be honest, here's something interesting. So a lot of smaller hospitals, like rural hospitals, those that are in smaller communities, ambulatory
mm-hmm.
surgical centers, they even have BMI cutoffs. They won't even do surgery, a scheduled surgery on you, if your BMI is over 40 or over 50.
It makes
but,
sense, but also...
I know. Yeah. Well, there are some increased risks
right.
and things like that. We
Absolutely.
Don't want to kill people with anesthesia. We don't want to kill people during the surgeries, especially if it's a chosen surgery.
Right.
So women are going into C-sections as an emergency sometimes during already a chaotic, difficult, stressful situation, and then they're having higher rates of complication with their C-sections when their BMI is especially over 30, over 40, over 50. So that's a kicker to me. I think that's where the rubber hits the road for me, at least, of more people, just people in general, and definitely more healthcare providers need to be talking about this issue out loud, because we're not just putting pregnancies at risk and things like that. We're putting moms at risk as they go through these pregnancies in ways that could be avoided, could be made better.
Absolutely.
Could be healthier moms, healthier babies, healthier pregnancies.
Easier.
Exactly.
Too.
Exactly. And I, before I did bariatric surgery, before I was a surgeon, all this stuff, I really didn't know anything about this. As a woman who was entering her childbearing years, this never came up as a thing. We know about it anecdotally, like you said, like you've experienced it in your own pregnancy, but nobody ever really talked about it or said it out loud. I have a big question, or had a big question, about why would weight loss or bariatric surgery make an impact here? What on earth does bariatric surgery have to do with fertility and sexual health?
I guarantee 90% of listeners still have that question.
Yeah. So let's get into it.
Yes, please do.
So the things that bariatric surgery does, and we've talked about it before, is it's a reset. It's a reset of your metabolism in a way that just eating less or diet and exercise for weight loss, they don't accomplish the same kind of reset. And you mentioned a really interesting way to think of that reset in this, when we were recording this earlier.
I said that we have a new cardiologist. I don't even know if this hospital I work at has ever had a cardiologist. And he's just out there cardioverting all the right people.
All the right people. He's not just cardioverting anybody with a pulse.
I asked Maria if it was like the same thing of when a patient is in atrial fib. You've tried using medications, you've tried bearing down. Isn't that even a thing?
Yeah, Valsalva maneuvers. Absolutely.
But your resort, you do need to, you need to cardiovert them. You need to shock them.
Exactly. And I think of, at the hesitation of making bariatric surgery sound like a bad thing or like a last resort. In fact, it should be used a lot sooner than later for people. It is the only tool that we know of that resets a metabolism.
Yes.
And the way that I think of it is a metabolic conversion.
Yes.
Like a cardio version. Think of it like a metabolic conversion.
Yeah.
So especially people who have things like PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, that is something that has those higher androgen levels. They've got the insulin resistance, all of that. It's essentially impossible for somebody with that metabolism to lose weight in a healthy way.
Yes.
It's essentially impossible for them to do that. And that in and of itself can prevent them from ever having a healthy pregnancy.
Yeah.
What if we could use this tool of surgery, of bariatric surgery, to help that person who can't lose weight in an otherwise healthy way to actually be able to get pregnant and treat and cure their
problem. Absolutely. And if they are going through all the hoops to have babies and for in vitro or whatever they're working
on. That's right.
They're in the mindset to have bariatric surgery potentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're really looking at.
You're already going through all of these different workups and all these different things, and surgery is a great tool to have at your disposal and to consider. And so let's talk about now why bariatric surgery works. Why does this reset? How does this reset happen? So when you have bariatric surgery, it's pretty interesting. You are able to have higher levels of things like follicular stimulating hormone and sex hormone binding globulin, which sounds, I know, like letter salad, like alphabet salad.
Like my crotch goblin. Sorry, that's so good.
No, it's...
And my babies, they're my crotch goblins.
I love it. No, but the thing is, basically what you're doing is you have higher levels of the things that allow eggs to be produced and released appropriately in women, so for ovulation, and lower androgen levels in women. So again, those things preventing ovulation or preventing implantation. And you also have decreased insulin resistance.
Yeah.
So all the things that are essentially preventing ovulation are taken off the table, or at least they're reduced. And the things that are enabling ovulation are improved.
Yeah.
So you're just lowering the barriers and you're letting things happen easier, which is super great. You also have way lower risks of problems during pregnancy. So things like preeclampsia, gestational diabetes, eclampsia. In fact, those risks go down by 80%.
80%. And what I learned today is that when you have bariatric surgery and are in remission of diabetes or high blood pressure, even if you do gain some weight back, less likely to get it back. All my research, I just learned that today. So,
I came straight from another bariatric surgeon today. That's right. Dr. Jessica Smith. That's right. No, but what we're talking about here is actually kind of interesting, because even if you don't have family history of these problems, or you don't have problems with diabetes or high blood pressure, any of those things before you have a pregnancy, if you have excess weight, your risk of those problems is higher.
Right.
After surgery, it's lower, and it's lower for forever. even if you regain weight, I was saying. And that's a problem that's not just going to affect mom, that's going to affect baby.
Yeah.
Because gestational diabetes means, and preeclampsia, things like that, can mean for a child that they actually get metabolic disorders as a result.
They come out big.
They can come out big.
I came to find out the doctor that came on call when I was in labor. Yeah. They induced me.
That's right.
She was about to send me home and she's like, okay, let's just do a 24-hour urine because I'm not going to send you home without knowing for sure, because I did get admitted for my blood pressure. Mm. And sure enough, I did have preeclampsia.
So,
and
there
he
you go.
Came out. My other two were 7 pounds. This one was 9.3.
My Lord.
Popcorn popping, baby.
Oh, my Lord. He knew he'd be popping that popcorn. He needed reserves. No, but you're absolutely right. I think those things are not anomaly. That's right. Not something that happened by coincidence. Mm-hmm. When people have higher weight on board to begin with, and mm-hmm. then go into a pregnancy and you're gaining weight in that process too, and again, having endocrine and metabolic changes, your risk of having those problems affect your baby and their birth are higher. So even the risk of things like bone problems, so skeleton birth injuries, is higher. Even problems like seizures, for instance, can happen at a higher rate. So yeah, it's completely not just a one-person problem anymore. You're now creating a potential issue for baby too in that state. Other things that can happen, kind of interesting on the men's side. So we've talked a lot about women and getting pregnant and things like that. But what about men too? Men
need two to tango.
Men matter too. I get it. So interestingly enough, there's a lot of research out there that shows that erectile dysfunction can be very effectively treated with bariatric surgery for people who have extra weight. We don't know all the mechanisms for that, but we think, at least, some of the same mechanisms that allow guys to have an erection, maintain that erection, ejaculate, which is like the CAMP pathways, PI3K pathways, all the kinase pathways, basically, all the things that allow the proper mechanism, different enzymes and things together. Those are the things, again, that we're lowering the barriers and we're greasing the skids, basically. Yeah.
Okay, so this is just a random question. So do we think that because someone is severe obese, that their body is more focused on other things that it wouldn't be at a normal?
Possible.
It is focusing on getting the right things to your vital organs instead of having babies.
Probably.
Keeping you alive is more important than your spermies.
That's right.
Or whatever.
That's right. Because even though having sex and having children, things like that, that's an instinct, that's a prerogative of species to continue and all of that. Yeah, it's also a fun activity. It's also an activity that takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
It's also something that isn't totally just objective. There's a lot of libido and desire and how you feel about yourself and attraction, all those things involved. So that is pretty interesting to me, Tammy. I don't know the research on that. It sounds possible.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is it's heartbreaking for me to think that there's a lot of people out there that are attractive to each other, want to have sex with each other, want to have babies with each other, want to not have babies with each other, just want to have a good sex life, and don't even realize that the problem may actually be something that can be treated.
Right.
And something that doesn't deserve the stigma it gets.
Yeah.
Because who on earth would necessarily be like, oh, I'm having difficulty getting pregnant, or I'm having difficulty in the bedroom and I have some extra pounds on board and maybe surgery. You never think about the two, right?
Not at all.
But I want to shout this one from the rooftops, is your sexual desire, your libido, your performance, your satisfaction, your function can be made better.
Yeah.
In these situations through surgery. And so to really consider that, because oftentimes we're thinking of bariatric surgery as extreme or the last resort. And I argue we are not considering it early enough.
And even Jessica Smith that we interviewed today said that we need to do it sooner.
Correct.
Because you can actually be more successful. So what is the healthy BMI considered?
So between really like under 30, under 25.
Yeah.
So, there's some data on that, that in some age ranges, actually 25 to 30 is perfectly healthy too. So disclaimer, I don't love BMI.
No,
BMI
absolutely.
Is made to be a population statistic. Right. It is not the best way for us to measure health or anything like that. But we know statistically, that BMI is 30 and over, we start to get some of these risks for people as a population.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. And then just some things to think about too, though. So we definitely had some patients that got pregnant through our program. Even on birth control. So that's something we got to talk about. Because even though we get really excited about babies and really excited about people having great sex lives and things like that, we want to make sure that people stay safe and stay healthy too. And that means not having pregnancies within 12 to 18 months after surgery.
Yes.
And there's a couple of reasons for that. And I think you actually, we've talked about those reasons before. So tell me about one of those reasons.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, when your tank is smaller, you can't get all the things in, especially you can't get all the things in at one time too.
Right.
So even when you're having a child, they won't suck the life out of you for the rest of your life. No, I'm just kidding.
At least for 18 to 25 years. Yeah. That is true.
That but is obviously they need nutrients and stuff too.
Right.
And in those very early stages or months of bariatric surgery, you're sometimes struggling to get your own nutrition
in.
And so really making sure that you are stabilized and making sure you're getting, you're able to get all your water, your protein, all that good stuff, making sure you're healthy and just stabilized out before putting another kicker in there.
Yeah. So bariatric surgery isn't in and of itself as a stressor, right? And it's something that changes how your body absorbs nutrients, absorbs vitamins and minerals. We put everyone on daily vitamins. And actually, pregnancy, when people get pregnant, we put people on daily vitamins too, prenatal vitamins, even before you start getting thinking about being pregnant, so that you have enough vitamin B and EK and calcium, all iron, all those good things, all the same things that we put people on vitamins for bariatric surgery. And so it's really important to make sure that you are tanked up and healthy enough before you undergo the second huge body change of pregnancy after bariatric surgery. So there, I always recommend having a true contraceptive plan with a patient before going through bariatric surgery, so they know they really, it's not safe to go through a pregnancy that close to bariatric surgery.
Yeah. Do you ask your, so my primary care doctor who delivers my babies at my 6 week follow-up, he's, what is our plan? Do you want more?
Yeah.
Do you ever bring that up to women now, especially because you're apparently making everybody.
I'm the baby machine.
You really are. Like,
like
at your.
Not me personally, but for other people.
But at your whatever follow-up, because you are to keep on your.
Yes.
Birth control.
Yes.
There used to be a thing to stop taking it.
Right.
Long ago.
Which,
that's
like years ago, right? Women were recommended to stop birth control around the time of bariatric surgery. Absolute no-no at this point. Would not recommend that. If you have a pregnancy around the time of bariatric surgery, that is going to really be a problem for the reasons that we mentioned, but also because why have a bariatric surgery? Why go through this whole process if you are not actually going to maximize how much you get out of it?
But I feel like you should put it in your or like your template every single appointment.
Yeah.
Making sure they have for that first year.
Yeah. It's a good point because we talk about it before.
Yeah.
And we talk about it at their first visit after. We don't necessarily keep talking about it.
Yeah, no.
And there's some research now, too, that not all birth control methods are the same.
Oh, absolutely.
Not the same in terms of how effective they are. Right. We know that. Sorry, that's not rocket science to anyone. But
for
in terms of
surgery.
Specifically for this, for our people, for people who've had bariatric surgery, especially bypasses, they do not absorb medications the same way in birth control pills.
Yes.
So it may be a good idea to switch to a Nexplanon or an IUD or some other form.
Or abstinence, because you're going to be fertile.
Or abstinence. That is a way, though. I don't know how common that is. I don't necessarily recommend that route. But yeah, so that's an important conversation to have because we want people to be safe. We are super excited when people get pregnant afterwards and can have safe, healthy pregnancies. But we want to make sure that there's a good plan going forward with that.
Yep.
We also really want to encourage people to come in and see their bariatric surgery team and their OB-GYN
on
a
very
regular basis. If you've had bariatric surgery before and now you're pregnant, you are going to need a little bit more kid gloves, a little bit more TLC to get through their pregnancy safely, potentially. So we really want to make sure that you're doing well, even though your risk actually of complications is low, which is really great. Some other things to think about. We really want to make sure that people are supported when they go through these things. Tammy you had a really beautiful story that you told that was really tough, I think, and really real about some of the not so great changes to your sex life after surgery you weren't expecting.
Yes. So we won't get too big into that because there is a whole episode. So
check that out.
Look up sex after bariatric surgery. There's a lot of good things, but there's also a lot of bad things.
And it's important also to think about there's other factors just outside of surgery. There's your mental health, how you're moving your body. There's what other medications you're taking. There's whether you're feeding yourself properly, whether you're getting enough sleep, all those things, all the same things that impact how well you do, period, and healthy you are, also impact your bedroom activities and your fertility too. So anyway, this topic, one of my favorites. I think we need to be doing a lot more research on this, a lot more discussion on this.
You will continue to make you can, I think people can tell the energy of the passion that you have for sexual health, and you're helping me with that, and just fertility and stuff. Like, yeah, thanks. You don't only want to help people's feel good, whatever, be healthier. You want them to be able to do all the things everybody else can do.
Yes. Grab life by the horns and live it as much as you want to, and really enjoy it, because everyone deserves to enjoy their life as much as possible. So anyway, if you want to hear more about this or have any comments for us, we'd love to hear from you.
Yes.
And if you want to tell us your stories, even if they're really personal, we'd love to hear them.
Yes. But so please go ahead and follow our podcast.
Yes.
We go over to Instagram, look up Core Bariatrics, and feel free to send us a private message with any comments, questions. Hey, I want to be on this, because we will absolutely, we want to know all the stories, because we want everybody to know you're not alone. Everybody's situation is different.
Right.
And we want everybody to feel as supported as possible,
especially with these tough subjects.
Absolutely.
So one thing I just want to end with is, let's help people have more babies and better sex
during the right time.
That's right. If they want to.
Yes. Yes.
And with that, we'll leave you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.